Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
You're not just whistling Dixie there, mister. This is the Brad Sesmatt Show on a Monday. Hi there, Jeff Munn, radio voice of Arizona State women's basketball and a guy that just kind of wanders around town most of the time with you on this Monday for Brad. We thank you for joining us. And the statement is said most often, and it's very true, especially in this market, there are no slow days. And a day that was already busy got even busier, I'd say about 90 minutes ago. And that's going to lead off our discussion today here on Sports360AZ.com and AZCentral.com. Very quickly, before we get into the other stuff, if you're not aware, the Coyotes apparently have dismissed General Manager Don Maloney. Now, this is a story that, on AZ Central that is still quoting sources. It has not been confirmed that we know of at this point. But we will talk about that. I'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute.
And to give you a quick update on that,
yes,
Jeff,
sir, Mr. Sorensen.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to just jump
in. No, that's
in.
All right. I'm glad you did.
But the Coyotes have called a 12:30 press conference today, and Anthony LeBlanc will be speaking. It is not said in the email that Don Maloney will be speaking. So
The subject of the press conference has probably not been divulged either.
No, it has not.
Probably
location
a major
and time.
Personnel decision.
Location
is it at the
time.
Arena?
It is at the arena.
Okay. Well, it obviously, and I'll get to my thoughts on that in a second, but we have so many other things to talk about. Obviously baseball. And we'll talk about the week that was for the D-backs, and I think more importantly, the week or 10 days that's upcoming. We will also, in our second segment today, I got a hold of, Eric sent me the audio of an interview that Tyrann Mathieu did yesterday on Fox Sports Radio concerning the very tragic news of former New Orleans Saints defensive end Will Smith being shot to death in what was basically a road rage incident. His wife was also shot in the leg. According to police, Smith pronounced dead at the scene. And Tyrann Mathieu had some really strong, profound comments about a number of things related to, from a societal standpoint, I think is the best way to describe it. Wouldn't we say, Eric, that his was much more of a look at society, especially in New Orleans?
Yeah, he is. He grew up around the violence, and it's all reference to the tragic shooting of Saints defensive end Will Smith,
right,
that happened late Saturday night.
Right.
And it's become kind of one of those crossover sports and general talk type situations.
Yeah.
It involved an athlete, but it's a much deeper problem than just a tragic shooting of an athlete and his wife. And the Badger really sort of dug into that, and we're going to play that audio. It's extensive audio. It's about
it
four
is,
and a half
but
minutes,
it's,
but it's well worth the listen.
Exactly. I was just going to say it is well worth going long form on the audio, and you'll understand when you hear it a little bit later on in the show. I'll also have a thought about Bruce Arians again saying something. You knew what he was trying to say, but he probably didn't say it correctly, and he did try to clarify those statements. And again, it involved parents allowing their sons to play football. Paula Bovin will join us, as she often does on Mondays, and yeah, a few things to talk about with Paula, including Jordan Spieth's meltdown at the Masters. We'll get her thoughts on Don Maloney. She was out at Chase Field for a number of the games this week with the D-backs. And we'll also talk about ESPN.com has, and I haven't seen it myself, but Mark Stein, who's a guy I've known for a long time and is a brilliant NBA writer, has come out with a short list of candidates that the Suns are supposedly interested in for their head coaching vacancy. And we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the news out of Philadelphia over the weekend. The worst-kept secret became official. And it had some interesting aspects to it. And we'll go over all that coming up over the course of this program. So, again, very busy day. All right, let's start with the breaking news. And it broke at about 8:30 this morning. Sarah McClellan broke the story, azcentral.com, that Arizona Coyotes general manager Don Maloney is being relieved of his duties effective today. Now, you ask what happens to Dave Tippett. Nothing. He has 2 years remaining on his contract, remains committed to the club. This is according to Sarah McClellan, but will not be the team's next general manager. As Eric mentioned, President, CEO, co-owner Anthony LeBlanc will speak to the media at 12:30 this afternoon. Now, and I'm going to bring Eric back in on this because, admittedly, I do not I love hockey, but I have not had the opportunity, especially because my basketball travels take me, you know, they take up most of my attention right in the middle of the hockey season. But we were talking about this before the show started today. I guess there is some chatter that there has been a power struggle ongoing within the organization.
Don't really know the details. I wonder if that's a situation between Maloney and LeBlanc or Maloney and Dave Tippett. Not sure. Honestly, to be quite blunt, I'm not close enough to the situation to have any real detailed facts on it. But I do think, Jeff, it's interesting because this is a team, they did not make the playoffs this year, but there is a blueprint. There is a plan.
Yeah.
And you can see where the direction of the franchise is headed. And it's just somewhat curious that you'd fire Maloney, because a lot of the boots on the pavement and the work behind the scenes, obviously he was doing as GM.
Yeah, and I will just say this, a couple of things as well. I had heard on a couple of occasions over the season little rumors that Dave Tippett and Don Maloney were not on the same page. Maloney, you might remember, admitted in an article that Sarah McClellan wrote that he gave Dave Tippett a bad hockey team last year. And they didn't come right out and say he was tanking to get the high draft pick they wanted. They did end up with the third pick as a result of the lottery. And by the way, I looked this up this morning. The Coyotes wrapped up their regular season Saturday night in San Jose. They finished the year with 78 points. Connor McDavid, who was number one overall pick, went to Edmonton. Edmonton finished at 70 points, farther back than the Coyotes. So obviously more details to come out on that story later today. The Diamondbacks finished their first homestand of the season 2-5, a loss yesterday to Jake Arrieta and the Cubs. Arrieta was not what I would call dominant on the mound. Got more attention for hitting a home run off Shelby Miller than anything else. And again, I'm going to say it. It's early. It's not time to panic just yet. However, as our friend Pedro Gomez has pointed out on this show, and it's a line that gets used a lot by a lot of teams, you can't win a division in April, but you can lose it. And you wonder if maybe that's what's going on with the D-backs, that especially as it relates now. They head out on a nine-game trip. They get to all three California cities, Dodgers, Padres, Giants, in that order. They really need, and especially in that San Diego series, because San Diego is just not a very good team, they need to make some hay here on this trip.
I mean, they're three games out, Jeff. They're three games out after the first week of the season, and yeah, the Diamondback starters do not have a single win yet.
That
seven
is
games,
the
no
Greinke
wins.
Starts Saturday. He gives up three runs in the first inning, and you think, what is going on here? The Cubs go on and win the ball game over the D-backs. He settled down after that. I believe he went five, six more innings and didn't really suffer any other damage.
But what is his psyche like right now? Because he is not used to having, I mean, when was the last time Zach Greinke lost two consecutive starts?
When was the last time? Now, nobody, and I'll give the Diamondbacks organization credit, they have never said we expect him to go 19-3 with a 1.6 ERA like he did a year ago. 1.6 ERA is completely out of the question at this point. It just, you know, I don't know how he gets to that point. Certainly he can still go 19-3. He can bounce back and have a 20-win season. But these first two starts do raise your concern level. Although, and again, I'm not here to make excuses for the Diamondbacks or Zach Greinke, but knowing the way that game turned out Saturday, the thought has always been about the great pitchers, that if you're going to get them, you got to get them early. And they got to Greinke early, three runs first inning. After that, he settled in. He was a much different pitcher. But again, just when you thought things were starting to straighten themselves out in terms of the pitching with Greinke, the hitting doesn't quite come around. They're starting to struggle a little bit to score runs. Bottom line is this, at least in terms of how you as fans need to approach this. I've said for many, many years, you don't buy into spring training numbers, good or bad. Randy Johnson had terrible springs, won four Cy Young awards as a D-back. The D-backs were tearing the hide off the ball at the plate throughout the spring. But try to keep this in mind. A lot of times in the spring, even when you're facing the frontline pitchers, they're working on things. They're not necessarily out there trying to get outs. They're trying to refine pitches. When the season begins, then they're trying to get outs. And it changes. If you've been around baseball, you understand it. I always use the phrase, players know how to read calendars. And there's no question that Major League players know when the regular season starts. The other thing, quite frankly, we said that Colorado was just hot and hit the ball really well, and they did. The Cubs are a very good team. At some point, even with the Kyle Schwarber injury, and we found out Friday he's out for the year, two ligament tears in his left knee, they can survive that because they still have Bryant, they still have Rizzo, they still have Addison Russell. I at some point, and I don't know if we'll have time today, but I'm going to share some thoughts with you about the process of building a baseball team and what you need to remember about what the Cubs and the Giants have done over the years in building their organizations. But now they go out on the road. They go to Dodger Stadium for three. Greinke's next start will be the series opener in San Diego. I believe that also puts him into the San Francisco series. Two pitchers ballparks. Shelby Miller's outing. He struggled yesterday. Had control issues early on. And again, two starts is not enough to where you say, okay, we're noticing a trend here. If this gets to the end of the month and it's still going that way, certainly by the end of the month, some starter for the D-backs is going to have a win or two. But if it continues along this path, then I think at the end of the month, you have to take a look at things, especially when you consider their schedule. When they get back off this road trip, they have a difficult time of it. In terms of the opposition, the Cardinals are in on the next homestand, the Pirates, and a return visit by the Rockies. They're really scheduling quirk that the Rockies come in for two series very early in the year. And as I've said before, Colorado the last couple of years has been a team that is very difficult to deal with in April and May, and they start to fade around June. So D-backs got their work cut out for them. Not time to panic, but they do have work to do. We come back. I want you to invest some time with me and listen to Tyrann Mathieu and some very powerful statements in the wake of just a terrible tragedy yesterday in New Orleans with a former Saints defensive end. And we will talk about Bruce Arians' comments and what he was trying to say and the way it came out. And we'll get to all that. This is Monday. It's not quiet, is it? This is the Brad Sesmatch Show on a Monday. Nice to have you with us.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
It's Matt's show on Monday, and we thank you for joining us at Sports360AZ.com, azcentral.com. Sports360AZ.com has all the latest information on local sports and in-depth coverage, too. That's a real big key. All right, I'm going to preface this by telling you that the audio that you're about to hear runs long, and it is worth the investment of your time to sit and listen to this if you haven't heard it already. Let me give a little background and it's a very tragic story. Former New Orleans Saints defensive end Will Smith shot to death in New Orleans' Lower Garden District Saturday night following a minor car crash. The 34-year-old Smith was shot after exchanging words with the driver of a Hummer H2 that rear-ended his Mercedes G63 SUV, causing him to strike another vehicle containing acquaintances of Smith's. Smith shot multiple times, was pronounced dead at the scene. His wife, Raquel, 33 years of age, was shot once in the right leg and was taken to a hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. It is a tragic story on a lot of levels. Tyrann Mathieu of the Cardinals grew up in Louisiana, in New Orleans, and he will explain his situation in a moment for those who are not aware. But he was on Fox Sports Radio yesterday in the wake of this tragedy, and he had some very profound statements to make about the societal aspect, I think, is the way to describe it, of the death of Will Smith and the opportunities or lack thereof for a lot of people in the city of New Orleans to escape a bad life and to try to emerge in better shape than they're in right now. So again, this is a long cut, and it is worth the time for you to listen. Here now, Tyrann Mathieu on Fox Sports Radio yesterday.
It's a senseless crime, and it happens time and time again. When it happens to somebody of that character, and me being a current NFL player, it hit so close to home for me. I was fortunate because all those things were around me, man. the violence, the drugs, the abusement of women. I mean, all these things were present in my life. And I take a step back and I try to reflect on my journey and what helped me out, right? I was able to go to a private school. I'm adopted. My adoptive parents were able to pay for me to go to a private school. So I had it better than most people. But when you talk about the education and you talk about the lack of recreation for kids to do, I mean, it's second to none in New Orleans when you talk about the lack of opportunities for these young people. And it's not just black kids. Mm-hmm. It's white kids. It's Asian kids. I had Vietnamese kids in my class that had lack of opportunity. And it wasn't because their parents didn't want them to be active in sports. Their parents were working 3 or 4 jobs trying to pay for the house that they were staying in or pay for food on the table. Mm. And so it affects these kids, man. And 80% of the people that I know, their fathers are in prison. Their mothers are in prison. I mean, it's a system that's in place, and I hate speaking about the system because I'm not a politician, but everybody can't be Lil Wayne. Some of us have to pick up a book. Some of us have to strive in other areas of our life to be great, and it doesn't mean you have to make millions and millions of dollars, because I've been in the NFL 3 years, and I've been trying to get my act together and worry about Tyron and, you know, make sure Tyron is on the right track. But I have a responsibility to not only the kids in New Orleans, but to kids in Chicago, all these inner cities. And it's time for me to speak up. It's time for me to reach out and to let these kids know, man, hey, you don't have to be a football player. And you don't have to be a rapper to make it out of those type of situations. But you do, what you have to have is motivation, and you have to have drive. And you gotta stop having this self-pity for yourself, and you have to stop following these groups of people. These people don't care about you, man. It's a tough situation because we've been programmed for so long to act and to think certain ways. And it's not okay, man.
Not.
We're painting a bad picture for these kids, and we're losing them. We're losing touch with them. I went back home a couple weeks ago to bury my grandmother, and it's just the vibe I got when I landed in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
The culture is absolutely different. It's so dangerous. When I tell you, Mike, I fly in and I fly out of town. That's how scared I am.
Yeah, I get it.
And it's where I come from. I love my city to death. But it's senseless. These kids have no motivation. They have no drive. They don't go to class. They don't go to school.
Mm-hmm.
They can't go to the park and to the playground like I was able to. The grass are 4 feet high. They have no rims, no basketball goals at the court. Like, you go to one of these recreational parks, and they're kicking you out at 5 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you want these kids to do from 5 to 9?
Right.
Their moms and dads aren't present. They have no other choice but to run these streets, man, and hang around people that doesn't have their best interest. I'm in a position where I can speak up, I can reach out. Hopefully I'm fortunate enough to sign a big contract. I'm able to give back money and to do all those things for these kids, man, because they need somebody with the right head on their shoulder.
Yeah.
Somebody that's going to guide them in the right direction. Just as much as the city of New Orleans puts tons and tons of money into Essence Festivals and to French Quarter Festivals, how about we put that much time and that much commitment into these kids and to directing them in the right way? And I'm not talking about just a weekend. I'm talking about let's do this thing for real. How about we reconstruct how we see these kids?
Tyron Matthew on Fox Sports Radio yesterday in the aftermath of the shooting death of former Saints defensive end Will Smith to kind of put a period to this statement about the story of Will Smith. Police said the driver of the Hummer, 28-year-old Cardell Hayes, was arrested on a charge of second-degree murder. The handgun used in the shooting has been recovered, according to police. But about Matthew's comments, and I'll get to the specifically about Tyron Matthew in a minute. I don't think there's anybody on the face of this earth that would disagree with what he's saying. And, Eric, if you want to get in on this, please do so. I think his comments are spot on in terms of what we need to do as a society to invest in our kids. Not just in New Orleans, but in any part of the country. I will tell you that in hearing him talk about the situation in New Orleans, I can't escape the thought, although I have never been to New Orleans, that they are still financially really trying to come out of Katrina. And that city was so impacted by the devastation of that hurricane. And we can get into an entire show on how quickly did the federal government respond, et cetera, et cetera. But that's the first thought that comes to my mind when I hear that New Orleans doesn't have the money to take care of parks and keep kids active until late in the evening hours. But I just to pull back his comments, you could tell the passion in his voice and how affected he was, not just because a football player was killed. That's tragic. Yes, it is. But the circumstances that led to that situation.
And one of the most telling comments that he said for me, Jeff, was towards the very end when he mentioned he went back for his grandmother's funeral and he just flies in and flies out and gets out of there as soon as possible because of the dangers of where he grew up. I mean, for someone of that magnitude, Tyrann Mathieu fears nothing, fears no one. He's overcome his own demons, and now he's in a position of power where he can talk about all the problems. But for him to just say, I get back there, and as soon as I can leave my roots and where I came from to get back to Arizona, I do so, really tells a lot about the state of the inner city of New Orleans and some of the surrounding areas.
It does, and I understood completely when he said they invest so much money in things like Mardi Gras, and the French Quarter, why don't they take some money and invest it in kids? Makes perfect sense to me. And I you could just tell the passion. I'll say this too, and I mentioned this to you, Eric, before we came on with the show today. I don't know, I've never seen an athlete, whether it was in this community or maybe in sports in general, who has transformed his image. And I give Steve Keim a world of credit because he must have seen this in Tyrann Mathieu when he drafted him, and a lot of other people didn't. And Bruce Arians, who I'm going to talk about in a minute, deserves a lot of credit too because Keim saw it, and Arians has basically cultivated this part of Tyrann Mathieu that maybe a lot of people just didn't see. And I agree with you. We talked about this in a lot of ways. On and off the field, Tyrann Mathieu is now the face of the Arizona Cardinals.
For sure.
And nobody's got a problem with that, including his teammates. What a profound, and again, we don't usually go that long with audio cuts, but there was a real good reason to do that.
And I've never been to New Orleans either. I've never been there, but it surprised me when I heard a few months ago that New Orleans is the most violent city in America. And it is. I mean, statistics show there are more deaths, homicides in New Orleans than anywhere else in the country.
There, and again, I've never been there. I had one chance to go to New Orleans, and it was the very first road trip I took with ASU women's basketball. We played in a tournament at LSU in Baton Rouge, and I had a little downtime, and I gave some thought to driving New Orleans, and I decided, no, I didn't have time, and I regret it to this day because it's a city that, it's one of those, it's certainly worth visiting for a lot of reasons. But I go back to what I said earlier that I think Katrina has had the impact of that tragedy, that natural disaster, continues to have a ripple effect in terms of the economy of that city, the opportunities for that city. Let me get very quickly to some thoughts about Bruce Arians. He was speaking over the weekend to a group of high school coaches at the Cardinals practice facility and made comments again about parents' decisions to let their kids play football. And I'm going to just read verbatim what he said. This is our sport. It's being attacked. We have to stop it at the grassroots. It's the best game that's ever been invented. I can tell you, threw in some other words that we can't say on the air. And we have to make sure that moms get the message because that's who's afraid of our game right now. It's not dads, it's moms. Our job is to make sure the game is safe at all levels. The head really has no business being in the game. There's a lot of different teachers, but when I was taught how to tackle and how to block, it was on a two-man sled. You did it with your shoulder pads. That's still the best way to do it. Apparently, some people, and I'm going to use the phrase, misinterpreted what Bruce was trying to say. And so he had to clarify what he meant in a statement yesterday. He was not saying that we have to attack moms. And again, as was the case at the owners' meetings when he said parents who don't let their sons play football are fools, you understood what he meant, and you have no problem with the actual message. It was the way that it was delivered that leaves Bruce Arians a little bit vulnerable to criticism. I don't expect him to apologize for what he said to these coaches the other day. This is a man. Let's go back to that word, passion. He has a great passion for football. And I admit, and I said this last Monday when I hosted the show, I attended the National Football Foundation Scholar Athlete Dinner a week ago Saturday, and there isn't a better argument for the value of playing football than what I saw that night. Young men, and there wasn't a lot of football talk. They threw out a few stats here and there, but mostly it was about these young men receiving awards and talking about what they were going to do with their educational opportunities that came to them by playing football. Yes. And you will notice that Bruce did say in this statement, we have to make the game safe at all levels, and we have to get back to teaching fundamentals. That didn't get into the comments here, but he did say that. We have to focus on teaching fundamentals, and if we focus on teaching fundamentals, a lot of these safety issues will start to subside, and I agree with him totally on that. We're up against a break. Paula Bovin will join us for our Monday visit, News and Notes with Paula. She watched the D-backs over the weekend. She watched Jordan Spieth melt down, which is good because I didn't watch that much of the Masters. I got to be honest with you. As soon as Phil didn't make the cut, I was out of here. And the Coyotes situation. And again, breaking news, Don Maloney apparently will be relieved of his duties as the team's general manager. Lots to talk about with Paula. So stick with us on a Monday on the Brad Sesmatch Show.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sesmatch.
And Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmatch on this Monday. And this is really, for me, hosting this show for Brad is one of the highlights. I would talk to Paula Bovin about rocks on the sidewalk because she's so interesting to talk to. We have a few more important things to talk with Paula about than that, and Paula joins us via Skype, I am told, and there she is. Hi, Paula. How are you?
Good, and I'm glad we're not talking about rocks. I've kind of exhausted that subject recently.
So oh, okay.
Not really.
I'm trying to think. Never mind. I'm going to go in order, chronologically speaking, I guess. The news this morning, your colleague Sarah McClellan came out with the story that Don Maloney apparently is out as GM of the Coyotes, and my first reaction was one of surprise and shock. What was your reaction?
It was the same. I had not heard any rumblings of that. I mean, obviously, when you're not in the playoffs again, and that has certainly been a challenge with this team of late, I guess I understand it, but there's always been this feeling that there is so much out of his control that you felt like he wasn't ever really given a fair shot to put a team together. This is the nature of the business. People in that position do not last very long. And if you're not winning, whether it's your fault or not, the GM is often the scapegoat.
And yet, and I'm not saying this as a criticism because I'm a Dave Tippett fan, Dave Tippett apparently is going to survive this. And as you mentioned, the turnover in coaches and GMs in the NHL is alarming. And Tippett, I think, if he's not the longest tenured coach in the National Hockey League, he's awfully close. And again, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to be because right. He's a tremendous coach. But I find it interesting that it's the GM that's walking the plank and the coach is staying put.
Yeah, it is interesting. I will say that I've heard there's been a fair amount of butting heads between the GM and ownership, much more than there has been with Tippett. So I think that was working against Don Maloney for sure. But I think they feel more concerned about personnel decisions that have been made than they do with how those people have been performing on the ice and how Tippett leads them. You know, there's been some moves that you applaud, and there's certainly been some moves that have raised some eyebrows at certainly this season. So, again, I'm not surprised. It's just one of those situations where you could see Don Maloney going somewhere else and have success, where things are a little bit more stable. I don't think management, and I frankly don't think fans have ever really gotten the opportunity to support and embrace this team because it always felt so unsettled.
And they do have, and I want to touch on one other thing with you, and this, of course, to my your right, my left, or something like that, is Paula Boven from azcentral.com, and I'm Jeff Munn. But one other thing, and then we'll move on to the next subject. How much do you think the decision on Maloney has something to do with the Coyotes? I don't want to say that it's a win or else kind of mentality, but you mentioned the uncertainty. That always ties into where they're playing. And I wonder to myself, are they trying to do something to get not just the community excited, but somebody who would be involved in helping them build an arena to get a sense of, yeah, this team is serious, they're on the right path, look at the moves that they're making in the front office?
You know, that's a great question, Jeff, and I honestly don't know. It's something, it's inevitable that you'll speculate on it because of the timing. My understanding, it had more to do with what I was mentioning before, sort of difference of opinion and butting heads with ownership that ultimately cost him. Those are the guys that are making the decisions that involve money and everything else. So, you know, if there's going to be a fall guy, it's going to be Maloney. And the bottom line is they haven't been winning. So, you know, you can say that it's mostly to do with all this other stuff, but we've seen teams struggle with other things and then they still are able to win on the ice. So I think people are disappointed. There was great respect for him, I think, in the community, certainly in the world of hockey. When I remember when they got him, everybody said it was such a coup. But, you know, again, when an organization is struggling, that's usually the guy they're going to get rid of.
You had a couple columns from out at Chase Field over the weekend, and it's one weekend. It's not time for people to be jumping off the sides of buildings. But inevitably, somebody's going to push a panic button. I'm talking about within the fan base. Should we panic? No. Concern maybe among the fan base or even within the hallways of Chase Field at this point?
I think concern is a fair word, although I think disappointment is probably the bigger one, Jeff, because I feel like they had such a great marketing opportunity. You know, if they could have gotten out to a strong start with this great pitching staff, I think the momentum would have built. There would have been so much excitement for this team. Attendance, you know, would have been great and all those things that go along with excitement. But, you know, bottom line is that they're struggling. And the only concern I would say for me is as someone watching this team is there has to be some assurance that these are not issues involving health, you know, or bad arms, those kinds of matters. We know what a bizarre, weird mental game pitching is. And there's only so many people in the world that can really be Major League Baseball starters. It's a really tough job. So, you know, as long as that's the issue and there are not storylines coming out about health and elbows and shoulders and all those things, I'm still fine with what's happened. You know, I don't think it's panic time yet because I haven't heard of those things. But I think that the bigger thing is just the marketing opportunity that's sort of passing by right now.
And they have a very difficult road trip, at least both ends, the front and the back, with a three-game series with San Diego in the middle. A couple other things to touch on, and this is our Monday visit, news and notes with Paula Boven from azcentral.com, and I'm Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat. I will admit, Paula, I watched about that much of the Masters, and primarily because I'm a Phil Mickelson guy, and once he missed the cut, I was like, I'm done. And
sure,
we can talk a great deal about Jordan Spieth's meltdown, the fact that a native of the UK won the Masters for the first time in half a century, I think. But I think a better thing I would like to throw out to talk about is just the perception of the Masters. There's been a perception within the golf, among golf fans, that it's the easiest of the four majors, maybe right alongside the PGA. There are challenges to Augusta. But it's a course when a Jack Nicklaus at age 46 can win the tournament, when a Phil Mickelson in his early 40s can contend, you say to yourself, how challenging is this tournament? I get the sense among sports fans, they pay a lot more attention to the U.S. Open now, especially without Tiger, than they do the Masters. Am I reading that right?
No, I sense that a little bit. You know, the Masters obviously will always sort of be held in a unique and high regard because of its history, much of it great, some of it bad, the storybook sort of setting there and everything else. I just saw my brother-in-law in Seattle this weekend, and his bucket list was to get to the Masters, and he got there for I think a Thursday outing, and you know there's such a limited amount of tickets, and he said it was worth every single moment that he was there. You know, he loved the nostalgia and everything else. So I think from a sort of historical standpoint and everything else, you know, it's got the edge over the others, but it, certainly as far as the challenges, you know, and we've seen what's happened in the U.S. Open, there's going to be a lot of golf fans that gravitate toward that. And Jeff, I'm kind of with you. I was interested, but, you know, I was always the Tiger person. If Tiger was playing, I'd watch. Then it was sort of Phil. If Phil is in the mix, it has my interest. I wasn't quite as invested as I have been in the past with this tournament.
A couple other things I want to touch on, and we've got about a minute, so I'm going to go very quickly. Bruce Arians' comments again, and I think it was another case of you understood what he was driving at. You didn't really disagree with his viewpoint. He just said it wrong.
Yeah.
And I'd be interested in your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, it bothered me a little bit only because, you know, why single out gender? I mean, there are a lot of men that are concerned about their kids. And I, again, you're right. I know what he was trying to say, and I'm glad that he sort of, you know, clarified the remarks. But it's been an interesting off season for him because there's been about three things now where you're this sort of affection everyone has had for Bruce Arians is still there, but you see him being criticized much more than I think he's ever been. And so, again, this is one of those things, not end of the world stuff. We understand what he was saying, but there's never really a good time, especially in situations like that, in a very, very sensitive subject matter. And I think the lack of sensitivity on his part, I understand his appreciation of the game, but I just felt like he's not acknowledging how serious of an issue it is. And then to bring gender into it wasn't the greatest call.
Lastly, since we visited last week, a number of news items out of Philadelphia with the 76ers, and the tie, of course, is Jerry Colangelo. Sam Hinkie, the general manager, is somewhere in the midst of 13 pages of copy, resigned. Yep. And yesterday, one of the worst-kept secrets imaginable, Brian Colangelo, Jerry's son, but a two-time NBA Executive of the Year, and it's important to point out, was named president of basketball operations. They have a coach. But we've seen it very often when the leadership changes, and it's funny, we mentioned that in the moments after Dave Tippett, but when there's a leadership change, a coaching change often follows. And I'm going to tie this in very quickly, and I'm taking too long, I can already tell. Mark Stein of ESPN.com put out a short list of candidates that he thinks the Suns are interested in for their coaching vacancy, and they are, in no particular order, Earl Watson, Mike D'Antoni, and Dan Majerle. I think we'd all agree that Majerle is a long shot just because of the history between Dan and the organization, the way it ended, and Dan's relationship with Jerry Colangelo. However, if Brian Colangelo decides to make a move with Brett Brown as the coach of the Sixers, how much chance do you think there is that he places a call to Dan Majerle?
I have to think there's a very good chance. You know, I was just at the Final Four, and Marley's name was everywhere. People were just talking about him. You know, he was on Dan Patrick's show. There's a lot of buzz about the guy. It's a challenging situation for him because while on the surface people say, oh, Grand Canyon, not that great a job, the reality is it's a pretty sweet situation for him. They pay him well. Obviously, there's great support there. The program's going to be going Division I soon. But who doesn't want to get a shot at coaching in the NBA? I mean, it's NBA money. You're not recruiting. There's all those things. So I think it's a realistic deal. And I, you know, as much as Jerry is tied to Grand Canyon, which is interesting, now he's got those ties to the 76ers. But I wouldn't be surprised if there was a call placed and discussions made.
Absolutely. Paula, I appreciate the time. We never have enough time to talk about all kinds of interesting things, but good use of the time that we had. Thanks. We'll see you next week.
Always a pleasure, Jeff.
Paula Bovin, azcentral.com, news and notes segment on Monday, and it's always a great treat to talk sports with Paula. We mentioned the Suns. They have a list of coaching candidates. There is a little intrigue to at least one candidate and maybe two, and we'll discuss that next on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jeff Munn for Brad on a Monday. Thanks for joining us. On a Monday, Brad Sesmatch Show, Jeff Munn from ASU Women's Basketball and wherever else I can pick up gigs in for Brad this Monday. We mentioned this in our last segment with Paula. Mark Stein, who's a guy that I've known for 20 years, back when he was writing for the Orange County Register, and is now one of the top inside guys at ESPN.com, and rightly so, has come out with what he believes is a fairly accurate shortlist of candidates for the Sunset coaching vacancy, and they are, in no particular order, Earl Watson, Mike D'Antoni, and Dan Marley. Quick thought on that, and I want to transition into the Philadelphia situation because there's a little bit more to it than just Brian Colangelo being named the president of basketball operations. Okay, Watson is a hard sell, and we've talked about this. I did the show last Friday with Greg Esposito, who worked for many years at Suns.com, just because he was an interim coach, and it'd be a hard sell to the public. D'Antoni, second acts are really hard. It's hard to duplicate what you did the first time. And I will say this about D'Antoni. I think he's a brilliant coach. Because, and not just because he won games with Steve Nash, but I always remember a quote that he had prior to his first full season as a Sunset coach. Robert Sarver had just taken over as the managing general partner, but Jerry Colangelo was very much involved. And there was a story that Jerry, Brian, Mike D'Antoni, and Robert Sarver went to dinner the night before the season opener, and Jerry asked D'Antoni, "Who are you going to start?" And without naming names, D'Antoni said, "The five best players I have." And Jerry said, "That's a great response." And that's essentially what he did, and that's what led to the 7 seconds or less revolution. Now, clearly, as the roster is put together now, Mike D'Antoni would walk in here and not see a Steve Nash or a Sean Marion or an Amari Stoudemire. Well, that's not to say that they couldn't get players of that caliber in here. But it's going to take time. Again, we're talking about a team that owns 3 first-round picks, is likely not to hang on to all three of them, try to package a couple of them for a veteran player. But it's an intriguing idea. Now, Marley. I would be more inclined to believe that Dan Marley would, if he was going to go to the NBA, would go to Philadelphia because of his relationship with Jerry and Brian Colangelo. I just think that there's just too much to repair between Dan Marley and Robert Sarver to really get to a point. And I'm not saying that Robert Sarver wouldn't try to mend his fences. I think he would. I think he realizes how much of a benefit community, public relations, and basketball-wise would be to have Dan Marley back in the fold as the head coach of the Suns. And certainly Dan has proven himself as a head coach with the work that he's done at Grand Canyon. That program is ahead of schedule, friends. They were hoping for a 20-win season this year. They got a little past 20 wins. They're a little ahead of schedule. So I'm not sure that works out. But then again, I'm not sure that I have a candidate in mind that's a perfect fit. Quickly about Philadelphia. In addition to Brian Colangelo being named president of basketball operations, Jerry Colangelo, who recused himself from any discussions of Brian as a candidate, has stepped away from post of chairman of basketball operations and will now become a consultant to the ownership. That's not a surprise because you got to remember that starting very soon, Jerry's going to be completely engrossed in the Rio Olympics. And he's not going to have time in June to really help out with a very important draft for the 76ers. Keep this in mind, too. And I was glad to see that the Philadelphia media didn't go overboard about the nepotism card. And I'm glad they didn't for two reasons. And I must give you a little disclaimer. I worked for Brian Colangelo, and I'm a big fan. He's one of a select few executives in the NBA to win Executive of the Year with 2 different franchises. His roots are in scouting. They've got 3 first-round draft picks. So I think it's a great situation for Brian to walk into. He said as much yesterday, and I think it's going to be a really exciting time for the people of Philadelphia. But in terms of the Suns, and they have 2 more games left, tonight with Sacramento, Wednesday with the Clippers, they have to hit the ground running starting Thursday morning on getting the coaching matter settled. And Ryan McDonough will obviously have a lot of work to do in preparation for the draft. But that means it's going to be a really interesting offseason. And now, all of a sudden, it's going to be an interesting offseason in Glendale, too. If you weren't with us earlier, Don Maloney apparently out as Coyotes GM. See, I told you, Monday, busy. Hey, thanks for being with us today. Sports360AZ.com, AZCentral.com. This is the Brad Sesmatt Show. And we're glad you joined us.